Chapter 7. Morehouse. A mile away from Thornfield Hall, I decided to travel on a road I had never been down before. I didn't know where it led, but it didn't matter. I walked for quite some time and tried to put Mr. Rochester out of my mind. Eventually, I heard wheels approaching the spot where I was resting on the side of the road. I lifted my hand, and the driver stopped. The driver told me he was going to a place a long way off, where I was sure Mr. Rochester had no connections, so I asked him for a ride. He asked for 30 shillings, but I had only 20. He said he would make do, and I immediately got into the vehicle. 2 days later, the driver let me off at a place called Whitcross. As I watched the vehicle drive away, I realized I had left my package of bread in the coach. I now had no food or money. It was a nice evening, and with nowhere to go and nowhere to sleep, I decided to lie down outside in the heath. I covered myself with my shawl, and exhausted from my journey, soon fell asleep. The next morning, I walked for a long time. At one point, I heard a church bell far off in the distance. I knew I must be approaching a town or a village. By the afternoon, I had reached a small village. I asked around a few shops to see if any work was available, but the answer was always no. That night, unable to find anything to eat or anywhere to sleep, I made my bed again in the woods. The ground was damp, and the air was very cold. I tried to keep my mind away from thoughts of Mr. Rochester and the life I had left behind at Thornfield Hall. The next day, I tried to find food or work, but again I was turned away. I could feel my strength starting to fade away. I walked many miles, and as it started to get dark, it was harder to see where I was going. My eyes still drifted over the scenery, looking for some place to go. Suddenly, a light jumped into view. It must have been a candle burning in the window of a house off in the distance. Exhausted as I was, I moved my feet toward the light. At some point, I entered a gate and a house rose into view. I followed the light and approached the door of the house. Beside it was a window through which I could see a candle burning on a low table. By the table was an older woman sitting in a rocking chair. Near this woman sat 2 young, graceful women. I could hear them talking to each other. It sounded like they were studying German together. I watched them intently from outside and soon learned that the younger women's names were Mary and Diana. The older woman was Hannah, the housekeeper. I had almost forgotten my own horrible position when the young girls suddenly rose. They left the room I had been looking in. I wondered if the residents of the house would understand my desperate situation and take pity on me. I decided to knock on the door and find out. Hannah opened it a moment later. "May I speak to your mistresses?" I asked. "You had better tell me what you have to say to them. Where do you come from?" said Hannah. I told her that I was a stranger, but I was looking for a night's shelter and a piece of bread to eat. She agreed to give me something to eat, but wouldn't allow me to stay or speak to her mistresses. After much insisting on my part, Hannah shut the door on me. I felt a wave of anguish flood over me. I had no strength left to find somewhere else to go. I slumped down beside the door. I felt like I might die, and I must have said so out loud, for suddenly a voice near me spoke. "Who or what speaks?" I asked, frightened at the sudden sound. A form was near me, but in the dark of the night I couldn't make out who it was. He opened the door to the house and Hannah greeted him. "Thank goodness you're back, St. John. It's such a cold and wet night. Come in. Your sisters are waiting for you in the parlor. I believe there are bad folks about. There has been a beggar woman here. Oh, she is not gone yet. Move off." Hannah spoke these last words as she saw me behind St. John. "Hush, Hannah," said St. John. "I want to speak with the woman." I was near and listened to both you and her. I think it's a strange case, so I must at least look into it. In another moment, I was standing in the bright, clean kitchen of the family's home. The 2 ladies, their brother, and Hannah were all looking at me intently. "St. John, who is it?" I heard one of the girls ask. I don't know. I found her at the door, he replied. I must have looked very ill, for soon enough I found myself sitting in a chair and some food and water was offered to me. While I ate eagerly, they asked me a few questions about who I was and where I had come from. I told them my name was Jane Elliott, but that I couldn't give them any more details tonight. Hannah, said St. John, let her sit there for now and ask her no more questions. Mary and Diana, let's go into the parlor and talk the matter over. The three of them left the room, but soon one of the young girls returned. I couldn't tell who, since I had begun to feel the effects of the warm fire and a full stomach. A minute later, I was being led up the staircase by Hannah. My wet clothes were removed, and I was put in a warm, dry bed. I remember feeling incredibly grateful before I drifted off to sleep. The following 3 days are difficult to remember much of. Although I observed when someone entered or left the room, I slept for the most part. Diana and Mary would visit me a few times a day. Thinking I was asleep, they would speak in a low voice. But I often heard what they said. I never heard a word of regret at the hospitality they had extended to me, and this comforted me. By the third day, I was better, and on the fourth, I could speak and sit up in bed. After I had eaten some food, I felt better. I decided to get out of bed, but I didn't know what to put on. I felt ashamed to appear in the dirty, torn clothes these kind people found me in. To my surprise, I found my own things, clean and dry, sitting on a chair by the bed. Once dressed, I made my way down a stone staircase and followed a low passage that led into the kitchen. Hannah was there baking bread. "You're up," she asked. "You look better, miss. You may sit down by the fire here," she said, pointing to a chair. We spoke a little, and Hannah told me that the house was called Marsh End, but some people called it Moor House. She also told me that the siblings were the Rivers family. Their father had died only 3 weeks ago, and their mother had died the year before. The siblings had been out for a walk while I spoke to Hannah. When they returned, St. John simply bowed when he saw me, but the two ladies stopped and kindly expressed their pleasure in seeing me well. I left the two sisters in the kitchen and found St. John in the parlor reading the newspaper. He was young, perhaps 28 or 30, with large blue eyes and fair hair. He had a very handsome face that was difficult to look away from. After a few minutes, St. John put his paper away and looked at me. He asked me a few questions and said he would write to my friends and relatives to let them know where I was. When I told him I was without friends or relatives, he was suddenly very curious. So were his sisters, who had now joined us. "Do you mean to say that you are completely cut off from every connection?" he asked me. "I do. Not a tie links me to any living thing," I answered. "Where did you last reside?" he asked. "The name of the place where I lived and the people I lived with is my secret," I replied. "If I know nothing about you, I cannot help you," said St. John. "Mr. Rivers," I said to him, "I will tell you as much as I can about the wanderer you and your sisters have so kindly harbored, but I cannot go into any specifics about anything." I then told them a little bit about my childhood as an orphan, about my parents that died, and my education at Lowood. I also told them that I worked as a governess before coming here 4 days before. I finally added, "The reason for my departure I cannot and should not explain. It would be useless, dangerous, and would sound incredible." After I had spoken, and my kind hosts had all listened carefully, St. John said, "I promise to aid you in my own way in time." The more I got to know the residents of Moor House, the better I liked them. Once I got well again, I joined Diana and Mary in the things that they did, talked with them as much as they liked, and helped them around the house when they would let me. Before I knew it, a month had passed. Diana and Mary had to leave Moor House soon to return to their jobs as governesses in the south of England. Mr. Rivers had said nothing to me yet about the employment he had promised to obtain for me. With Diana and Mary leaving soon, I found it urgent that I find a job soon, too. I decided to ask St. John about his plans for me again one day. I found him reading in the parlor. "Mr. Rivers, I wish to know whether you have heard of any service I can offer myself to undertake." After some explanation on his part, he finally told me that he wanted me to be the mistress of a school for girls in a nearby village called Morton. A boys' school was already open, but he wanted to open a girls' school now. The students would be from poor families in the area. I didn't have to consider his offer for very long. "I thank you for the proposal, Mr. Rivers, and I accept with all my heart."